25% of the bones in your body are in your feet. Your feet are a part of your body which we tend to take for granted, yet they hold us up every day, assuming we're standing up. We've been wearing Vivo barefoot shoes for more than 8 years now. They are incredible. They have a wide toe box and a minimal sole. Research has shown that by wearing Vivo barefoot shoes, your foot strength will increase by 60% in a matter of months. And foot strength is really important to your balance and your overall movement potential. We've partnered with Vivo barefoot shoes because we absolutely adore them. They have transformed our own physiology and we really, really believe in them.
That's all we wear.
They're giving you 20% off their range of shoes. They have a full range of kids, adults, women's, men's.
Dress shoes, all sorts.
Formal shoes, all sorts of full range anyway. 20% off with the code HAPPYPAIR20 at checkout.
You'll also get free access to their online course, which is called Human Potential with so many world leading experts, incorporating breath work, animal movement, calisthenics, some things we absolutely adore.
Simply use the code HAPPYPAIR20 for 20% off. Really amazing. Full range of shoes. Just go to vivobarefoot.com. Geez, what age are you, Daryl?
I'm 54 this year.
Geez, you look fucking fantastic.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, I'm trying.
54. Wow, amazing. Great.
Well, doing what I can.
Yeah, well, I guess first place I'd love to start is, for anyone listening, like, what is your core message? Like, what is your core message and why should someone listen to this podcast?
My core message is that it's my mission to help people fall in love with movement again. And when I say that, I'm talking about the love of movement we all experience as children. That love for play, exploration, curiosity about ourselves and the world around us. And as we become adults, we tend to focus on the pain and the discomfort and the hard work that goes behind a role in fitness or in physical activity. And so I want to steer people more towards joy and pleasure rather than pain and torment.
That's really a nice one. That's a very admirable one. So how does that fit with modern life? Because modern life for most people is like, you know, once you become an adult, people tend to get serious. You know, we're serious. We're grown-ups. Life is serious. You know, we're serious about mortgages. We're serious about, you know, our careers. We're serious about all these type of things like play. Huh. Could you talk about the importance of this word play? Because that word for most people is associated with kids and I'm playing
and
with my
childish.
Kids.
It or can be off-putting to some adults, to some really responsible adults.
Yeah. So it, for adults, it appears to be superfluous, right? Or confined to when I've got some spare time, which doesn't really exist, I may find time for play. But fortunately, we have a significant body of evidence telling us about the importance of play at all stages of life. And in the absence of play, you have nothing like comedy, art, being creative, having any hilarity, you know, it's just depression. So the opposite of play, according to Dr. Stuart Brown, who's a psychologist who has researched for play for nearly two generations now, so 50 years of play research at all ages, defines play as not the opposite of work, but the opposite is actually depression.
Wow.
So devoid of any joy. So as adults, because many of us find it difficult to be on our playful path. So we don't recognize necessarily that we're playing. And play can be as simple as flirtation. You know, play can be as simple as navigating, you know, the experiences you have when you begin a relationship. It can be the banter you have around the water cooler. Right? It could be the joy you have watching a comedian at their best, having a laugh with your mates, right? All of that is play, but it's also far more expansive than that. It's the pleasure that is driven by intrinsic factors, where we do things just for the sake of doing it, where we're not just goal-based, but we're flow-based. We're in the moment, we're mindful. And so for this seriousness that we talk about, if we observe children playing, it's really serious for them, right? It means the world to them. And as adults, even though we believe we've grown out of that, we haven't at all. Think about, let's go to Vegas for the weekend, right? Think about, let's go out and get smashed at the local pub tonight. You know, let's play poker. You know, we have all of these adult behaviors which are playful, but there's also something that can be quite destructive in some respects. So we definitely seek it. We seek these playful behaviors, but sometimes they can be misdirected. So I would certainly argue we need to reevaluate what play means to us, what joy means to us, what passion means to us, and how we can incorporate this into our lives so it's integrated with this hard work, you know, no pain, no gain mentality, where actually let me seek more play, more pleasure, more passion, more fulfillment, still achieving the objectives that I want in life, still being serious about what I want from life, but in a way that's pleasurable.
Yeah, I love that.
So the key word there you said was pleasurable. Like, it seems like, you know, as you said, the opposite of play is depression. And, you know, what you're talking about, which I'm understanding, is it's more, it's not necessarily what we do, it's how we do something. There's an attitude of playfulness that we can bring in to every aspect of life, and particularly movement, I know, is your key area.
For sure. So my definition of play is that it's not the activity that one does, it's the attitude that you have. It's the mindset. So you can do anything in a playful state. You know, you can hammer a nail into a wall playfully if you choose to do so, right? So I think it's really important to reframe play in a way that is a superset of work. And in doing so, if you think about anything that you can do with a work ethic mindset, if I want to be more creative, I need to be more playful. Because by being more playful, I'm exploring more options. I have a much more open, you know, mindset. My horizons are broadening. I have a much broader scope of influences that I can draw upon. You can enhance your cognitive function by being more playful, because you're not looking at the limits one has. You're thinking about how I can expand and broaden and smash through those artificial limits that we place upon ourselves. So for me, I working in the active play space, and I suppose initially looking at play as something that can help make exercise more enjoyable for me, I realized I could apply these play concepts to other areas of my life. So being more creative, I've developed products and services by, you know, kind of stepping into that play mindset. And so problems that previously I couldn't solve or felt were impossible to solve, I could find a way. And so that's how play has become much more part of my life. I've incorporated more physical activity into my day because I think about how can I think of all of these playful opportunities to move more, where I'm going to enjoy it immediately, instant gratification from movement. I can explore and be fascinated about the world around me, so I can see more opportunities to move, rather than me thinking, oh, there's only one place of movement, which is my local gym. There's only the exercises I can do based on the equipment that I have or the floor space available, and based on the reference material that I read, like the magazines or online fitness programs telling me what I should do and how I should do it. Actually, there's an infinite variety of movement patterns, of experiences that I can feel whilst moving, which isn't just, when is this going to end? And I have to do this because I'm going to be healthier and I'm going to feel better when I do so. Actually, why not feel better now, right? Kids, as we know, kids are constantly looking for instant gratification. There's lots of experiments where, you know, you say to children, hey, sit down. We're going to leave the room. We're going to put a packet of Maltesers on the table. And if you don't touch those Maltesers, you're going to have a much bigger reward. And then, you know, the kids are like looking around. Is there anyone watching? You know, oh, it looks really tempting. No. And then before you know it, they're like, no, can't wait, need it right now. Because for them, it's like pleasure, the reward now is far more important than what happens next. And I think for some of that pleasure delay, we see that that discipline is a really good thing for us as adults. But when it comes to movement and continuing a movement practice, if we just rely on the outcomes, on what will happen when I do this for 12 weeks, 6 months, 5 years, 10 years, a generation, most of us don't do it. That's the long and the short of it. Most of us can't wait that long to feel good about movement and physical activity.
Yeah, for anyone listening, Daryl, can you differentiate between movement and exercise? Because many people think movement and exercise are the same thing, and one is a subset of the other. And I just wonder, can you articulate that for anyone listening who's confused?
Yeah, so I mean, movement is anything we do above being sedentary, right? So anything above sitting and lying down is movement. And if we wanted to be really precise about this, movement is pretty much what's happening by us existing, right? So the blink of an eye, you know, our heart beating, you know, our respiration, our breathing, that's movement, right? So we have the autonomous movement that happens just by us being alive. You have the sedentary behavior where that movement still exists. And then you have everything beyond that, where it takes effort and exertion from our bodies to be able to deliver that activity. So, you know, from sitting to standing, from standing to walking, from walking to running, to sprinting, to lifting, carrying, jumping, crawling, climbing, etc. And these differences in intensity, from being very still, very slow, gentle movement, through to the most explosive and powerful and energetic of movement, is what I'm kind of referencing. So exercise is very much a subset of the repertoire of movement options that we have available to us as humans. So exercise tends to be structured, repetitive, sometimes based on sets and reps, on duration, on volume, sometimes adding some programming. Then you're stepping into, say, training rather than just exercise. But that's really the differences between the two. One is very structured. One is potentially programmable. We know what's going to happen when I do this. We know what the outcomes are expected to be. The other is what I should be doing throughout my day, is finding opportunities to move, finding opportunities not to be sedentary, to recover from that activity, to think about what I want to do functionally, you know, to be thinking about what I want in terms of independence as I age, in terms of maintaining physical function, also improvements in mood, improvements in cognitive function, reducing cognitive decline, reduction in risk of disease. So in terms of benefits, there are many benefits physically, mentally, and emotionally.
It's amazing. It reminds me of like when you look at some of the longest living people on the planet from the blue zones, they don't go to the gym. They don't work out as per we do in the Western cultures. They move throughout their day. There's just movement is part of their day. Whereas the average, you know, person living in high income countries, most people listening, you know, it's less about movement and it's, well, I go to the gym to exercise, and it's repetitive set of processes, as you were saying, movements. And maybe throughout their day, movement is not as common as it would be in these long living countries, because the environment and their habits are very different. So what I'm understanding, what you're suggesting, is that you're an advocate of moving more and in a more playful daily manner, rather than a more joyous, playful, creative manner that brings out that inner child, versus this working out, which is people have serious faces and they're serious about the gym and they go do their serious thing and it's called work out.
It's called work.
Whereas we play tennis, we play golf, those are times of fun and joy, and work out is I'm serious about losing weight, or I'm serious about building muscle, or whatever it might be.
Yes, I'm serious. And the thing is, it's we shouldn't separate, or we shouldn't separate seriousness from play. Because again, looking at children, play is very serious. It's the it's if adults are out of the equation, play at a significant part of our childhood is the most important thing ever, right? If children could decide what they wanted to do and parents didn't get involved, kids wouldn't say, hey, can I please go to school? Can I please study for exams? Can I please have all of these structures that have everything that I need to get through? They're like, can we get up? Can we probably have something that we enjoy to eat or drink? And then can we just play all day? Can we just play our favorite games until we're too tired and we have to go to sleep and have a nap and then get back up again and play? So play is a really serious pursuit. Unfortunately, because we see work as serious and play as superfluous, we don't place as much importance and attention to our playful state. And so we're driven by working out. We're driven by the language of working out. No play, no gain. You know, my warm up is your workout, right? You know, my sweat is my body crying for mercy, right? You know, this is the language we use to describe how we should look and feel when we're working out. And if we think about exercise and working out, it's a supplement. It's like a proxy for the lack of physical activity we would have got, or some people still have, say in the blue zones. So physical activity is very much a part and part of their day. For us in the developed world, in the Western world, industrialized world, most of us are sedentary. We get up, we sit down, have breakfast. We sit down on our way to work in a commute, or we're working from home now. We tend to work in offices. Even if we have a labor-intensive job, we have lots of machines that will do most of that work for us. So even labor-intensive work isn't that labor-intensive anymore. Then we finish our working day. Then we're back in the car or on the train, sitting down. Then we come home. Then we sit down, entertained for the rest of the evening, bed, right? If we're lucky and fortunate, we have a gym membership, which will say, right, it's important for me to exercise. I'm going to spend half an hour every day to exercise, to work out in a way that hopefully gives me the benefits to override that sedentary behavior from the rest of the day. The downside is it is and should be seen like a supplement. It doesn't really replace a wholesome, nutritious diet of movement. It's better than not having any movement, for sure. But, you know, it's a subset of what our bodies should be doing. It's a subset of the variety of movement, of the intensities of movement, of the joyous and expressive forms of movement that we should be doing.
So, sorry to cut you off there. What would that look like to anyone who's listening? They might go, oh, well, I just think a movement is a gym. Like, I just go to the gym, that's it. What does it look like? Like, how does it look like in someone's day? Like, if they're kind of going, okay, this sounds interesting, I'm curious.
Okay, so one is, I mean, I kind of call it the ABCs. Right. So the A would be avoiding sedentary behavior. So you see the stairs, you see the lift or an elevator, you decide I'm going to take the stairs. Right. You think about your commute to work, you decide, is there any of it that I can actively commute rather than just being in a car for that journey? Right. So it starts from the beginning of your day of you saying, I want to avoid sedentary behavior whenever I can. I'm at the office. I have an option to instant message a colleague who sits on the other end of the floor, or I can get up and walk to my colleague and have a conversation. And when I'm having a conversation, I can stand rather than sit. And I can take more stairs whilst at work, and I can walk and go out for lunch. Hope maybe access some green space or go to the local park and move there too. And so this process of including more movement into your day is really about you deciding, A, I want to avoid sedentary behavior, right? I want to avoid sitting. I want to avoid being in one position for a long time. I just standing. I want to be moving around. B is about making better decisions about breaking up sedentary time. So as soon as I am thinking about being in one position for a long period of time, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, what can I do to incorporate some movement in? So that could be some stretching. It could be, you know, doing some squats at my desk. It could be running on the spot. It could be deciding, okay, I'm going to run up the stairs rather than walking up the stairs. It could be deciding to take a lengthier break and doing something active at lunch. And then C is about avoiding, you know, comfort, right? And again, it helps you to make this decision again about what are all the easy things that I can do today which will make me physically inactive, okay? And so it's uncomfortable for us to decide, you know what, I'm gonna leave the car at home. My office is 30 minutes away by foot. I'm gonna walk to work. You know, it's uncomfortable. There's some discomfort there. So we should be embracing that discomfort and avoid comfort. And so those would be my kind of the ABCs of, like, you know, making sure we're avoiding sedentary behavior whenever we can, breaking up sedentary time into smaller chunks. So by being more active more frequently, you reduce the risk of sedentary behavior. So the research tells us if you're sedentary for 6 hours a day, 1 hour's worth of exercise, of moderate intensity exercise, will not undo that sedentary behavior.
Wow.
And what's alarming about that is, most of us are not sedentary for 6 hours a day anymore. Most of us are sedentary for far longer than 6 hours.
Yeah, I saw something frightening there the other day saying that children nowadays are spending less time outside than prison inmates. And I just thought just alarming and frightening.
Yes, they are, unfortunately. So, you know, prison inmates are mandated to have 1 hour a day outside, you know, being physically active. And now we do have children spending far less. In the US, it's about 7 minutes per day of unsupervised free range, free roaming time. That's the average now post COVID. It's shocking, unfortunately. And we don't place the same importance on our kids having this free time.
Wow.
And the benefits of this free time aren't just the fact that I can say, no, I have my kid going to play football, you know, after school. You know, they're on the school team. They move an hour every day. Part of the importance is the unstructured free play, the exploration, again, the curiosity, the exploring risk, you know, and embracing risk and challenge and conflict. So there are all these areas that are help with our emotional and personal development that comes through this play cycle that many of our children nowadays don't have anymore based on changes in society.
Yeah,
societal pressures and parental concerns.
Sorry to
interrupt
there. I was just gonna ask in terms of, like, so obviously kids aren't moving as much. What about adults? Like, what are the current kind of rough statistics in terms of, like you said there, if someone is, like the average person is sitting, like stats I've been heard is up to 9 hours a day. You know, the average person's sitting for 9 hours a day, which is very common. Like, what effect is this having on people's health? And why is this so imperative that we kind of change this?
So, what I would say as a headline is the way we consider the importance of food as underpinning our health, as helping us to reduce the risk of chronic lifestyle disease. Movement, with my bias and with evidence, is more important than even the most nutritious diet. Because when we think about movement evolutionary, ancestrally, the way we accessed our food was through movement. So movement was a prioritization, right? Anything we had to do to farm, to harvest, to access, to source food, there was a significant amount of physical labor involved to do so.
Yeah.
The feel-good hormones, so endorphins, serotonin, oxytocin, dopamine, all of those hormones are linked to movement. All of them. All of them are activated through movement. So dopamine, risk reward, serotonin, the happy hormone, you go outside, sunlight, you move, you activate serotonin, for example. Oxytocin, human contact, walking together, marching together, having conversations together, bonding, social interactions in oxytocin. Endorphins, the kind of pain relief hormone, right? So endocannabinoids are produced. These basically flood the body with endorphins, which reduce pain physically and mentally. So one of the reasons why exercise is prescribed as a way to handle anxiety and depression. So we have this significant body of evidence telling us movement is incredible for our physical health, reduction in risk in cardiovascular disease, cancer, cognitive diseases like Alzheimer's and dementia, diabetes, and lots of understanding about the mechanisms at play as to why that is the case. You have the mental health benefits of being physically active because of the precursors to all of the feel-good hormones. And then you have the emotional benefits that come about by us being more human, by being more social through physical activity.
Wow.
So if you remove movement, then what are you doing? You're basically reducing the brain's ability to work within its cognition. So you're increasing the risk of cognitive decline. You're reducing the risk of being able to perform academically or at work. So there's a reduction in performance. There's an increase in fatigue. You're less able to remain focused. You're less able to concentrate, less able to be creative. Right, you're less able to have empathy for your other humans in terms of emotional intelligence and the like, and you have an increased risk in chronic lifestyle disease factors, so elevation in blood sugar, elevation in harmful blood fats like triglycerides. So you sitting down, for example, we have an enzyme called lipoprotein lipase. So from sitting to standing, just contracting the muscles to stand and supporting your body weight, you activate this enzyme, and this enzyme breaks down fatty acids in the blood, triglycerides, LDL, cholesterol, for example. So we have these incredible mechanisms at play, the pun intended, at play, that are working to maintain a healthful state, which are activated only through movement. And so in the absence of movement, these mechanisms are no longer working. So lipoprotein lipase is deactivated. Another hormone called irisin, which was only discovered in 2012. So this hormone called irisin is also activated by muscle contraction. And this muscle contraction activating this hormone promotes a healthful benefit to the body. So reduction in type 2 diabetes risk, it improves the health of the pancreas. It helps with our bone strength. There's crosstalk from muscle to bone, for example. And I mean, I could just go on.
Yeah, yeah, it sounds like
these myriads of benefits.
Yeah, it sounds like there is. And when you think about it, it's when you think of it from an ancestral point of view, as you said, like pre-industrial revolution, like humans had to move a hell of a lot. Like movement was just a prerequisite part of life. And if you look back from photos 100, 150 years ago, everyone was skinny. Everyone was thin because yes. There was labor was just part of life. So therefore these chemicals were created and we had a lot of we were dying from other things, you know, like, you know, issues, cleanliness issues and hygiene issues and bacterial issues and whatnot. Whereas nowadays, yeah. If you look about it, like movement is just not part of life. Like for movement, it's exercise is what's happening now, which is really just yes. Kind of realizing that, oh shit, I should exercise to feel good for these benefits. But it's almost like the big question that's coming to me is like, how do we design our lives? Like you gave us the ABCs, like of yeah. How to incorporate more movement in our day. But what do you do and what do you do to your clients? Like, how do you really kind of go from, okay, in my head, exercise is the only way of movement. And my modern life, I've got a busy job. I've got kids. We've got to drive them to soccer. I've got to do school runs. My life is really busy and demanding. How do you coach your clients or how do you kind of help people in this journey of getting more movement?
Yeah, so I believe active play is the best form of self-care. So I want to combine physical activity, more physical activity, more movement, with a playful state. So I like analog gamification of my life in a movement sense. So what I do is I create games for myself. I create games when working with my clients that will help them increase their motivation levels and their opportunities to move more, which is sustainable. So they're thinking less about, oh, another thing I have to do, to another thing I have to do. So it's really a change in mindset and seeking these opportunities to move more and to think about creating these games and challenges and these competitions that are intrinsic to you, that are valuable to you, that you can incorporate into your day. So I'll give you some kind of some case studies. One client of mine, busy mother, doing a school run, having a full-time job, having to come back and pick up the kids, you know, having to do the housework in the morning, tidy the beds, having to prepare meals in the evening, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? No gym membership because I can never attend. Don't have time to exercise. Just don't have the time. What can I do? And what I started with was getting her to help the kids make their beds up in the morning. And so she and the kids could get more movement. He's like, what do you mean? I don't understand what you mean. And I was like, right, you turn it into a game. You put on some music that you all like, and you make a game out of making up the duvets, out of tidying up part of your room, about preparing for the start of your day. And to her surprise, the kids were like, yes. Like, where's this new mother come from? It's like, you know, Christmas has come early. So that was the start of the day, of getting the kids to play this game, of tidying their rooms up, of going downstairs. So they had to go downstairs to brush their teeth. So it's like, okay, when the kids are going down the stairs, you're probably not going to like this, the sound of this, but get them to crawl down the stairs. Get them to move down the stairs in a really interesting way and see if you can join them. So that was part of their morning ritual, climbing down the stairs, crawling down the stairs. Then the kids are brushing their teeth. It's like, yeah, get them to stand on one leg. You know, join them. If you want to encourage them to brush their teeth for 2 minutes, get them to brush their upper and lower mouth for a minute each, standing on one leg. So literally within the first sort of like 15, 20 minutes of previously being, get up, oh, don't want to get up, you know, come downstairs, have something to eat, okay, get in the car, let's go. There was some movement. There was some joy. There was some social interaction, which was pleasurable for all of them. They were playing this game of let's enjoy the start of our day, let's incorporate some movement, and let's continue with this. And that basically progressed to the school's only 5 minutes away. 5 minutes away, but we used to go in the car, right? So that then became our staying at home. We're all going to walk to school together. And in that, on that walk to school, it was like explore different way routes to get to school. You know, kids are walking on the walls, they're balancing on the walls, they're avoiding the cracks in the pavement. And the mother was fully on board with this. So she, by the time she got to work, she was in a really good mood. The kids were feeling great about the start of their day. And she wanted to continue this practice throughout the day. So she just continued this kind of playful mindset, couldn't wait to get home to pick up the kids so they could do that route back and find other challenges. And so for her, she went from busy, sedentary, stressed out, you know, just doing what she had to do as a mother, to I'm actually enjoying spending more time with the kids. I'm more active. I'm finding more ways of playing games and having physical activity challenges throughout my day.
I like
so,
that. One.
So that was a strategy that worked very well for her. And there's a term which is called HIPAA. So it's HIIPA, which is high intensity intermittent physical activity. So HIPAA is basically a way of thinking about, okay, I want to be physically active. It needs to be intermittent because I don't have the time. So if I can have 30 seconds of increasing the intensity of whatever I'm doing now, that's going to have some health benefits. So whenever I have the time, whatever that time frame is, I'm going to do something really energetic. Then I'm going to continue with my day, and I'm going to be getting these movement minutes in whenever I can.
So
HIIT curve is the way to go.
So would that be, say, for example, I'm doing computer work, or I'm sitting down every 30 minutes, set an alarm, and actually spending 1 minute doing air squats, for example, or doing push-ups, or doing something just to stimulate my body, the movement aspect of my body, rather than just sitting indefinitely for 2 hours.
Rather than sitting indefinitely. And if we remember that the breaking up of sedentary time is more important than the activity almost.
Jeez,
so just you switching from sitting down all day to deciding 1 minute of work, you know, of 1 minute of movement every hour, that's more beneficial for you than you sitting down for 8 hours and then saying, okay, I'm going to do, you know, 20 minutes of exercise.
Wow.
Right. So breaking up sedentary time is more beneficial than doing a single bout of exercise at the end of the day.
So it really is rethinking how most of us live, because most of us do have jobs. We sit in front of a computer and then we go to the gym once a day, maybe once every couple of days. And
so
what you're suggesting is really being proactive in terms of taking control of your own life and going every 30 minutes, every hour, give yourself a minute or two to just move in some capacity.
One of the keys, and I think this is one of the keys that you're saying, which I love, is about bringing a playfulness. This morning when I was bringing the kids to school, Daisy's the name of our dog, she was walking down the stairs on four knees, and Ned, my 7-year-old son, of course, walks down the stairs on all fours. And I was like, wow, it's just so inbuilt that play is part of their day. But as adults, we don't really do it. And regularly I do it with the kids, and you definitely feel a bit weird with the way people look at you. I quite enjoy it. I quite like being idiosyncratic. But for many, it's, you know, it's difficult to stand out or to look a bit strange.
Yeah, what would
course,
you have any tips on that?
Of course it is. Well, you know, I've been doing this a long time. And given my background, so I previously worked in investment banking technology. If there was a definition of seriousness, that was one significant definition of seriousness.
How did you find the play? How did you find the play?
How did play find you?
And how did the lightness, did you discover the lightness?
Well, I had several health issues based on being sedentary all day, based on a really poor diet, based on not sleeping very much. and you know, my doctor telling me you've got elevated blood sugar, you've got high blood sugars, you've got really poor cholesterol profile. Here's you know, some statins, here's some metformin, here's some beta blockers, here's this cocktail. And I was like, I was 35 at the time. And I said, is it, you know, I'm sure exercise can help with blood pressure, right? And that's all I knew as a benefit of exercise. And the doctor said, yes, you've probably got some time to do some exercise, and let's review, you know, in a month or so, you know, a month or two. And that's what happened. So I joined a gym, started exercising, went at it pretty hardcore. And when I next saw my doctor and he did some blood tests, he was like, you know, have you taken any meds? No. Your blood test looking pretty remarkable. So I had this personal transformation of a health journey through exercise. And then I wanted to learn more about this. I was like, wow, this has happened. My doctor was like, there's research. What? There's research? You know, what does that mean? Can you send me the research so I could have a look at it? So I was fascinated about the power of physical activity and exercise and movement and what it could do to one's health. But after a few years, I hit a brick wall. I was the strongest, the fittest I'd ever been. I felt really good about myself physically, mentally, in terms of my fitness levels, but I started to procrastinate. And I was asking myself the question, why? You know, you love exercise. Why don't you want to go to the gym? Why are you putting off your workout until next Monday, you know, rather than tomorrow being Monday? Like, why? And I realized I didn't enjoy the process. I was clock watching. I was, you know, looking at what everyone else was doing and never being truly satisfied with what I was doing in the gym. And I had a eureka moment. And my eureka moment was really two things. One was, when was the last time you really loved movement? First as a kid and then as an adult. And the answer for my as a kid was, I pictured long, hot summer day, get a knock on the door from my mates. Hey, you coming outside to play? Of course, what else am I going to do? Playing all day, literally chowing down food outside, you know, not wanting to hear my mother say, it's time to come inside. Those days used to, it felt like they lasted forever, had an incredible amount of fun, and we were moving and playing all day, getting up to all sorts. So that was the first memory I had of loving movement, of enjoying movement. And the second was, as an adult, clubbing.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, I've been to some clubs, and I literally enter the club, the music's great, and I'm dancing all night until they say it's time for the night to end. And I'm like, no, why doesn't it continue? I've got to wait until the next time I can go clubbing. And so those two experiences made me realize there's a way that I should be able to reclaim this love of movement and this joy of movement, and that I don't have to exercise to achieve the benefits of physical activity. I can find other ways. So that was my kind of arc of going from very serious, there's only one way to do this, don't smile at work because you'll get the sack, you'll be fired, to I need to seek joy. So I left banking. I decided to create the Primal Play Method and create a system and a philosophy around movement and making sure that play psychology was one of the pillars of that. So I have three pillars for the Primal Play Method. Evolutionary biology is one, exercise science or exercise physiology is another, because I wanted to have evidence to back up why what I was doing and why. And the third was the play psychology piece, which is, how can I take this bitter pill of exercise and physical activity and make it more palatable? And so this sweet aspect of movement became active play. So yeah, that's how I got from where I was to where I am now. And I've been fortunate enough to maintain this love affair with physical activity and movement, and found a way to help share that message with others. And fortunately resonates with many who do find this process of every January 1st being told, you know what you need to do? Yes, join a gym. Yes, get into shape. Yes, work out. Can't find the time. Don't have the money. Don't know what to do. Don't really enjoy it. Okay, maybe this is a solution for you. Why don't you play out instead of working out? What do you mean play out? Think about how you felt when you were a kid. Think about how you feel when you do something incredible with movement that you love and enjoy. And then finally, think about how you can recreate that. Model that and recreate it daily. And so that's what I do. And if you ask me what I do from a day to day, we'll be here for a very long time, but I'll give you a couple of examples. I will do things like, there's a bus. I want to get that bus. I'm not going to get it at this stop. I'm going to sprint and against the bus. I'm going to race the bus. Of course, I'm not going to beat the bus, but I'm going to do everything I can to get to that bus stop before me, because I've got some advantages, right? There's other traffic in the way of the bus. Right, the driver may have some sympathy for me when he sees me, you know, trying to pretend to be Usain Bolt and coughing and spluttering. And so I will turn that challenge, that objective, into a game. Something less strenuous. I will be walking with my partner down our high street, and we'll decide we're going to walk, you know, for a mile or two down this high street. And so we'll create this game where we'll say, right, every person we walk past, we're going to give ourselves 5 points. If anyone overtakes us, we'll deduct 20. If somebody's standing still, we'll only get a point, right? And so we'll end up from a kind of a, like a, you know, normal preamble of like, oh yes, another Saturday walking around the shops, to, you know, almost like bobbing and weaving. Can't run, can't jog, we can only walk. And then before you know it, we've walked that mile or two, and we're laughing at our escapades, at trying to, you know, get as many points as possible. But believe me, that state of playfulness didn't happen overnight. I had to really work at this and recognize that this is my game, and hopefully I can find others who want to play with me.
How has your partner received it? How has your partner received it? Have they been kind of like, well, Daryl, what do you like? Come on, be serious. Like, you're an investment banker. You're a coder. You're a technologist. Like, you can't be into play. Like,
I suppose I'm a better person because of it. I'm nicer to be around. You know, I can make fun of myself. I can be less serious, and it as I say, it was a gateway. This gateway of improving my health through physical activity, right, through exercise, became okay. I want joy now, not just the pain. So that I admit the pain is what fascinated me to begin with, because I took that hard work ethic of banking into the gym. So I came to the gym and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to smash and beat everyone here. I'm going to like absolutely dominate this space. It's mine. I'm the leader. So that was my attitude. But you know, you get injured. You start, as I said, I started to procrastinate. I'm like, why am I not loving this? I don't understand. I've achieved all of these gains, but I don't love the process. I only love achieving certain targets. And then of course, after a while, you're achieving less and less. At the beginning, almost everything is a success, right? When you're starting out. But then it's like the gains are more difficult to achieve, and I'm not enjoying this, and I'm not achieving my personal best every single time. So I was like, hold on a second, Daryl, like, do what you really love. And what happened was I actually just expanded significantly the movement projects that I encountered. Right, I just saw the world in a different way. So my local park is my gym. Then it became my playground. So I'm like, oh my goodness, there are so many things I can do. Isn't this incredible? And fortunately, my partner, you know, questioned and challenged me on many of that. But as soon as she took part, as soon as you experience it and you realize it's not nice spectating with this, you want to take part. That's for many is what people need to do.
And then you got a playmate. Now suddenly you got a playmate.
Yeah. Then you got a playmate.
What are we going to play?
And the way I like to analogize this is, you know, imagine you're taking your dog for a walk and your dog could speak to you, and you go to your local park and your dog sees other dogs playing and your dog goes, hey, can you let me just sit here for a moment so I can watch those dogs play? And as the owner, you'd probably be like, are you sure you want to do that? And they're like, yeah, it's amazing. Look at how incredible those other dogs move. Look at them chasing. Look at them, you know, winning. Look at them getting that ball. Oh, isn't it amazing? Of course, the dog's not going to do that. The dog's going to be like, get me off this leash now because I want to play chase. I want to play fight. I want to get in the midst of those other dogs. That's what I want to do. And I realize as humans, we also want the same. And the barriers tend to be, you know, I don't feel comfortable. I feel, you know, people are watching me. We feel concerned about what others think of us. But if we're not harming others, and that pleasure we're receiving is intrinsic and is wonderful to us, then what people see actually, and what I found as a coach in my local park, is I got most of my clients because people come up to me and say, what are you doing? And I'd have to answer the question. And when I answer the question truly, people say, oh, so do you, are you, is this something you do? Is this, you know, where, how do you do this? How can I do this? And that's how I got my client base. And that's what helped me realize I could make a living out of this. Because people saw me doing crazy stuff and just was like, can you help me do the same? Like, why are you doing that? What are you training for? I'm like, I'm not training, I'm playing. Like, what do you mean you're playing? You know, like you're a grown man, like what, you know, but they got it through, they got it by watching and realizing they didn't want to spectate, they wanted to take part.
I love that, because I heard when I was just doing a bit of research, you had a cool story about where you were kind of a gym goer and you were, you know, training. And then you talked about how you went into a pub and there was a whole series of guys chasing you. I wonder if you could tell that story, just because it really...
Yeah, that was in... Yeah.
I'm sure it was a while back.
Yeah, that was a good while back. So yeah, a friend and I were we walked into a pub where let's just say as soon as we walked in, they didn't like the look of us. Let's just say that. And we both decided we have to back out of this pub slowly, you know, not turn around and run, but we've got to walk out because we've got a chase in our hands. We're going to be chased. So a few things were said. Not by us, for sure. A few things were said, and we're like, we've got to get out of here. And I remember us both kind of chuckling at each other because these guys were like 20, 30. I mean, they were, you know, huge. I remember thinking, these guys are going to be out of breath in the first 10 meters of this chase. There's no way. They don't even look as if they can walk, right? So we got out of the pub. We started running. And then we're like, oh, yeah, we've got this. You know, we're fit. We're great. Look at this. So we're sprinting now. And every time we started to look back, we saw these guys. And they were, like, gaining on us. Do you know what I mean? We just saw that kind of venom and hate. And we're like, what? How is this happening? We're the fit guys. But it's like, no, they've got this adrenaline, they've got this, they're just charged and amped, and we're not taking this seriously enough, right? We've really got to get out of here. So we carried on running, and we got to a point where it was like, you know what, probably better if we split up. And we found this wall, and my friend says, okay, I'll give you a leg up, right? So I gave him a leg up, actually. So I gave him a leg up. He got over this wall into this garden. And I was like, hey, you need to pull me up, right? Because I want to get over there too. And so he's like pulling and pulling. And I'm like, what about all those rows in the gym? Like, look, you know, and, you know, what about all those pull-ups we do? It just didn't help us. So the pull-ups we were doing in the gym couldn't help us climb this wall. He couldn't help me climb the wall. So he got over into this garden. I ran the other way. The good news is we were okay. They didn't catch us, but they did everything they could to catch us. But we got away. But part of that experience, we both said afterwards, like, there's something not quite right with our gym program. You know, it's not functioning enough. Why can't I climb a wall that is pretty much the height of me being able to do a pull-up? Like, why? Why can't you, when you can, you know, deadlift like twice your body weight, why can't you pull me up even just a little bit? You know, so I can climb this wall. So those are the challenges for us. So we started to train in that way. You know, we went back to the same wall at a safer time. But yeah, we started wall climbing. We started deadlifting each other. We started like, you know, I've got pictures of me on the top of a wall, like cliffhanger style, like Stallone style, Hollywood style, like pulling my partner, with, you know, with one arm. And we kind of realized, and I realized certainly, that I needed to make my training more adaptive to real life demands and to be more functional. And so that was certainly this kind of evolutionary biology part of just thinking about humans' capabilities of being generalists, of being able to just do the stuff you need to do. Right, which isn't necessarily in a gym program and isn't in a fitness program. So that became part of the philosophy as well, is thinking about how you can manipulate objects, right? You know, not just deadlifting a metal bar with some rings on either side, but actually, can I deadlift you? And so we had that experiment of like, wow, I'm the same body weight as you. You can deadlift twice your body weight with a bar and rings at the end, but you can't deadlift me 50% of your one rep max. Why is that? You know, so those, again, these sort of, these challenges, these games, being really playful about this. So I spent time, you know, piggyback carrying and fireman carrying and like then carrying two people and then three people and then pushing cars and, you know, carrying logs and climbing trees and then realizing the fun aspect of that was more important than the achievement. Do you know what I mean? Like initially there's probably some counting of like, okay, how heavy are you again? All right, you're 80 kilos. Okay, yeah, I reckon I can fireman carry you. To, I have no idea how heavy you are, but I'm going to give it a go anyway. And let's see what happens. And if I can't carry you, I'll just collapse in a heap in a way that's still going to be safe. And it's fine. And if I can carry you, then, you know, maybe you can get on as well. And let's see if I, you know, so it just became this like really playful way of exploring what I could do and feeling more capable physically than when I was like doing whatever I could in the gym. Do you know what I mean? This functional evolutionary biology approach, evolutionary fitness approach to movement became really important.
It's a great message. Like, your message is brilliant. It really, really is. It's so important. Like, the seed you've planted most in me is that one of that within the day. Like, it's less important spending 1 hour of movement, but consistently incorporating micro movements within your day. And it will, like, yes. For me myself, I realize I do need to set an alarm, because there is periods where I'm sitting there for 2 hours or 3 hours or even 4 hours where there's lots of meetings or calls or stuff. Whereas it really is setting an alarm. Like, I do go through some phases where I'm not, and I am someone who moves a lot. So it really is just like, you've planted such a great seed in terms of that. And then that other thing which I've hugely got from this is the attitude, that attitude of playfulness that most people listening to this, their association to exercise is workout. Whoa, it's serious. I'm serious about workout. Whereas how can we incorporate more play? Because that compounds not just in our physical movement, but in terms of joy, in terms of creativity, in terms of lightness and general sense of joie de vivre. You know, it's so important.
Yeah. It's incredible. Once you switch off that limiter that we have, you know, again, you know, remember being a kid where you really feel as if you can do anything, right? Even though you know you can't. You know I can't fly like Superman, but I feel as if I can. You know, I can pretend to be Superman. I can pretend to be Spider-Man. I can pretend. And this pretense, this visualization means, as an adult, I can think about the things that I can't do, but I can think about the things I'm going to try to do anyway, right? So the most hilarious times that I can think of where people are making comments aren't necessarily when I'm playing games or climbing trees or sprinting after the bus. It tends to be things like, I'm going to walk to my local supermarket. It's a mile away, right? The big supermarket. And I'm not going to get an Uber. I'm going to be loading up on the shopping. And I remember once having literally, I think I had about like 8-9 carrier bags, right? And I had something else. I can't remember what it was, but I bought something else and I had it around my neck. And I remember walking back home. And I was stopping every few meters. And like, you know, the carrier bags was like ripping into my fingers. And I'm like, oh my gosh, Dow, are you going to do this? And I'm like, okay, back, get the bags back on. Let's take a few steps. And I remember the amount of people who were like, you know, do you want any help? Like, are you sure you don't want to get a cab? Do you want a lift? And I'm like, no, I want to do this. And in that moment, I realized it wasn't whereas before it would have been like the punishment, you know, like the punishment aspect of it. It was like, no, I decided I was going to go shopping. I was going to get these bags. I decided I wasn't going to use any alternative forms of locomotion. It's going to be difficult. It's going to be a struggle, but how am I going to feel when I get there? And the great thing is that feeling of people interrupting me saying, do you need any help? And I'm like, I kind of do. But I'm going to say I don't, because I just want to keep going, was enough of a driver. And so in that process was a lot of fun, even with me going, oh my gosh, I only walked 2 steps and I've stopped again. You know, I'm like laughing at myself because it's kind of ludicrous making that decision in the first place. But that attitude and that engineering your environment where you know your environment is outsourcing, you know, we kind of outsource movement to other devices. We engineer in a sedentary environment, right? A convenient, comfortable environment, which makes it more difficult for us to move, actually. It's not our fault, actually. We're not sedentary just because we can't be bothered. It's because if we place a more convenient option most of the times we're going to say yes.
Oh, we're inherently like, lazy. Humans, we're inherently lazy. We seek comfort.
Yeah. Well,
we seek comfort, yeah.
I think we've got to land this ship now, Daryl. So, yeah, really, thank you so
much.
Can
you talk more about your primal play movement? Because you now have you offer courses and you're kind of really teaching people more about this.
Yeah, so I have the primal play method, which again, those three pillars: evolutionary biology, evolutionary fitness, exercise science, exercise physiology, and play psychology. And I train trainers or coaches who want to teach this to others. So I have courses, I have books. My last book was called, for adults, was called Animal Moves, a best-selling book. And I have a picture book for children called My First Animal Moves, which helps children kind of understand the importance of movement in a screen-dominated world. And talking about sedentary office workers, and I don't have one to hand, I have a series of decks, fitness decks, of playing cards. And I have one for office workers called Office Moves. And so when you're thinking about getting those movement snacks, you know, those movement breaks at your desk, those play breaks at your desk, you know, you just pick a card. So pick a card, you do a little something, then you get back to work, whether you're at a standing desk or a seated desk. So those are the sort of products and services that I have.
The deck of cards sounds great. That's very practical. Yeah, really, really good.
Yeah. And again, makes it's, you know, it's tactile, it's analog. You know, you're pushing technology to one side. You know, you have to pick a card. You got to, you know, like, do I really want to do that now? Well, I'm going to commit to it. It's only 15 seconds long. It's a snack. And I think, the takeaway message really for people is don't just focus on one meal a day. So, you know, OMAD is it, the 1 meal a day protocol that some people follow, right? The warrior diet, you know, intermittent fast, have a brief window of food, and then you go, I'm done for the day. With movement, that's not the approach you want. You want little and often, you know, you want lots of snacks that are nutritious, that are fulfilling, that you start beginning of the day and you continue through until the end of the day.
Brilliant. Such an message. Important message.
Really,
such an
really
important
good.
Message. Yeah. Thank you so much, Daryl. This
Love your work,
really
Daryl. Brilliant.
Oh,
really,
thank
really
you so
important.
Much.
Really,
and your Instagram content's great. Really, really is. Yeah, fantastic.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Much, much appreciated. It's been a real pleasure speaking to you both.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thanks, Daryl. And congrats again on being a grandfather again. That's pretty remarkable.
Thank you.
Yeah, really,
thanks,
really
Daryl.
Is.
Yeah.
Thanks for telling the world. Thanks for telling the world. Yeah.
you look like you're just a new dad. Like, you look incredible. So.
Oh no! Cheers. Thank you. It's filters. It's all the filters. But, but thank you. Yeah. Have a great day.
Thanks, Daryl. All the best.
Bye, thanks for
bye,
your time.
Yes. Bye bye.
While we have you, once a week we write a newsletter. It's called Happier. It's got simple, tried and tested practices to make your life better. We include recipes and practices that you can apply on a daily basis to make your life happier. We've had lots of people say before that it's really helped make their life better. So you can sign up on the happypairs.ie, our weekly newsletter called Happier.